The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everyone. Glad to see you here. Welcome to...
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm saying hello as well. Hello,
okay.
Everybody.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say I've got Eva here with me, of course, and also Joe is here helping in the background. So good to see everybody and good to hear you, Eva. Today, we're going to do the Leo labor, and then Eva and I are going to delineate our charts for you. I know you guys are just really looking forward to finding out everything you always wanted to know about the two of us, right? That's my Leo sun saying, of course you're interested in me. All right, let me see if I can do this right. And there, you should all be able to see that now. Obviously, we're not going to go Leo to Scorpio. We're just going to do Leo today. We're going to try and do one a month as people delineate their own charts. But I need a couple of more of you to volunteer. I do have... Michael, and I do have Yvonne. Both of you have said that you will, and a couple of the others are have indicated interest, but so far no one has committed. So we'll talk more about that in a few minutes, though. The Leo labor is to slay the Nemean lion. Isn't that the cutest little thing? Look at that little guy. I'm going to fight you. So Hercules was sent to Nemea, where this lion was terrorizing the countryside. He set out, but on his way, he dropped the bulk of all of his weapons, deciding that he only needed to keep his club and his bow and arrows. He looked for the lion, but all he found was the people of Nemea hiding indoors. They were afraid to venture outside. For days and several nights, he searched and he listened for the lion's roar. And then he saw him. On the edge of a deep thicket was where the lion stood, roaring. Hercules stood still. He grasped his bow and arrow and planted an arrow in the shoulder of the lion. It flew straight to the mark, but it failed to pierce the shoulder of the lion. He tried again and again, but no arrows pierced the lion. The lion came towards him, untouched, fierce with rage. Throwing his bow upon the ground, Hercules rushed the lion with his club. The lion turned and ran into the thicket on a rocky side of a mountain. Hercules followed, but he lost the lion. He searched everywhere, and then he found a cave, and he heard the roar of the lion within. He entered the cave, passed through it, but he found no one by the time he emerged on the other side. As he stood, he heard the lion behind him. Wondering what to do next, Hercules decided to block both ends of the cave and shut himself up with the lion within. Then he turned to face the lion. With his two hands, he grasped the lion, holding it close, and he choked it. The lion grew weaker and weaker. Hercules held on until he killed the lion with his own great strength. He stripped its skin, showing it to the people as he exited the cave. The people of Nemea celebrated the death of the lion and returned to their land and their lives. And so this was another triumph for Hercules. So after a relatively simple and non-dangerous labor that he had in Cancer, Hercules now faces this dangerous lion. Hercules himself symbolized the lion, the king, the ruler, and because of this, he symbolically wore that lion's skin. The lion stands essentially for the coordinated, dominated personality, which is a highly evolved individual. With the triple aspect of the lower personal self fused and blended and very potent beyond the average person, the aspirant often becomes a difficult person. He has a mind and he's using it. His emotions are controlled, or else they're so blended with his mental reactions that they are unusually powerful. He's exceedingly individual, very often aggressive, and self-confident, self-satisfied. His personality can be devastating force in the family group or in society or in any organization that he works with. The aspirant has to slay the lion of his personality. Having emerged out of the mass and developed this individuality, he then has to slay that which he has created. Selfishness has to give way to unselfishness. He has to subordinate the self to the whole. There have always been manifestations of the sun gods, and this labor of Hercules has been enacted for us by a few people here and there who came before or after Hercules. Every nation has produced highly evolved aspirants who track the lion of the personality down into the cave and master it. But in relation to the myriads of human units, they have constituted a very small minority. Now we have a world full of aspirants. The coming generation in all nations will produce thousands of disciples, and already tens of thousands are seeking the way. So people are now very individual. The world is full of personalities, and the time has come when the lion of the personal self has to be dealt with and the cave entered. I think a lot of you can relate to this. We see so many of these very dynamic and destructive personalities in the world today, don't we? In the symbolism of the scriptures of the world, the most momentous happenings are enacted in one of two places, in the cave or on the mountain. The Christ was born in the cave. The personality is overcome in the cave. The voice of the Lord is heard in the cave. The Christ consciousness is nurtured in the cave of the heart. But after the cave experience, the mountain of transfiguration is climbed, and the mount of crucifixion is achieved. Okay, and here's our Leo summary. So Leo is about self-assertion, sensitivity that leads to individual awareness, learning all about who we are. Negative traits include being headstrong, egotistical, domineering, impatient, and arrogant. Positive traits include kindness, a big heart, optimism, truthfulness, and loyalty. Esoteric concepts are learning to blend the mind and the heart in the will to illumine, learning to express spiritual will with purpose and intent. Leo has the sun as both the exoteric and esoteric ruler. Exoterically, it represents the physical sun and the personality, that little I, and it stimulates the centers below the diaphragm. The keynote from the angle of form is let other forms exist. I am because I am. Esoterically, the sun represents the heart of the sun and veils Neptune, soul awareness. The keynote from the angle of the soul is now I am that, and that am I. DK tells us in esoteric astrology that the sun represents the solar angel, reminding us that the soul remains eternally present. Neptune stimulates the heart, the throat, and the ajna centers. The switch here is from self-love and emotional desire to that of love aspiration, dedicated to the soul. From us perceiving ourselves as the center of our personal universe to recognizing we are part of a much greater universe. Leo is self-mastery in preparation for selfless service. and its polar opposite is Aquarius, which stimulates group awareness and world service. The axis that eventually needs to be balanced here and then recognized as the same line with the joint purpose is the one of building self-mastery specifically for the purpose of our usefulness to the group in world service. So that's the brief down dirty on the Leo labor. Does anybody have any questions, or Eva, do you have any comments on Leo?
I actually do. Surprise, surprise. So if you could just go back to a few of the slides where we had the lion on his hind legs and almost standing up. Not so much that one. I think you had another one even earlier. Go back a little bit more. Yeah, well, yeah, but okay, this is a good one. See, you all see the lion on his hind legs and sort of standing up. Look at the glyph being on the very left here under the word labor. You see how in Cancer, the energies were folded on themselves with the circle almost in the middle. So here, if you think of the circle being the center of that Cancer glyph rising up, you see how that glyph rises up and then comes down. And that's the lion standing up. It's a similar kind of image that you have with the glyph and with the lion, because it is in Leo that you are meant to rise above the crowd. Remember, Cancer was the crowd. Here in Leo, you rise above the crowd, because in Leo is where you are working on developing your personality, your identity. And this identity, as we all know, has a lower identity and we have a higher identity. The other interesting point that I want to point out here is that Leo's ray is the fifth ray. And the fifth ray, as we know, is the ray of the mental, of mentality. It's the mental ray. And if we learn our Raja Yoga, we learn that the Raja Yoga is the kingly yoga, and it's meant to resonate with the soul or the plane of soul, which is the fifth. In Leo having the fifth ray, it's the first time we actually see the fifth ray. If we started in Aries and we follow right through to Leo, we haven't seen the fifth ray at play yet. So it tells us that the king of the jungle, the lion, and the kingly yoga, which is Raja Yoga, resonate. The number fives resonate there, because it is through the number five that we work with soul, that we become eventually a five-pointed star. So that number five has a lot to do with the mind, because we know that the soul dwells on the plane of mind, and it is only through accessing the Son of Mind, which is the soul, that we evolve to that point where eventually we are more than our identity as personalities. So I think that's it for now.
Okay, thank you for that, Eva. Does anybody have any questions on Leo before I go to before I begin actually delineating my own chart? Crystal clear as mud. Okay, good. Then let's proceed here. I wanted to do mine right after the Leo labor because, as you can see, looky what I got here. A big old fat Leo sun right in my third house. Now, DK actually tells us that we should first try and ascertain our stage along the path before we begin delineating the chart. So in that regard, I believe I've taken the first initiation and I'm now walking the path. I'm trying to gain soul control over my personality. And with this assumption, I would be getting my lower vehicles in order. They're already in order enough that they're working as a coordinated personality. And I'm beginning to express what I consider to be the higher traits of the exoteric or the mundane rulers. In other words, I'm using the planets and the signs within my chart at some of their best expression, although I am still, of course, prone to fall back on some of the negative traits from time to time. I'm still essentially that personality that we just heard a lot about. I'm also awakening now to the new influences of the higher energies and the esoteric rulers as my soul begins to gain traction over this wayward personality. I believe that I have a Ray 2 soul and a Ray 6 personality, and that that's expressed through my Leo Sun, who is trying to grow into my Gemini ascendant. And both of them are hoping to overcome the limiting past patterns of my Libra moon. My moon in Libra has never actually seemed to be that limiting to me, but I definitely relate to it more on mundane levels, I have to admit. My moon here in my fifth house, right here, 15 Libra, the exoteric ruler of Libra is Venus, and that's Virgo in my fourth house, right here, of family and heritage. Venus gives me this analytical outlook, that Ray 5 that Eva was talking about my family dynamics, you know, and I really, I can recognize the difference in my parents' outlook. At one point or another, both my parents were nurturing figures, so I consider my moon to represent both of my parents. My mom was more balanced. She did her best to treat the six of us children exactly the same way, but my dad was more black and white about it. He was very either or, and he had definite favorites among us kids. Esoterically, I think that I am working on the required spiritual pattern of the esoteric keynote of Libra. I choose the way which leads between the two great lines of force. I think that balance is important to me, and I think I exhibit it. Moon is in my fifth house, as I mentioned, and that's my house of creativity. For me, it could be veiling Vulcan. And for me, Vulcan has to be in Leo. It's always going to be within 8.5 degrees of the sun. My sun's at 11 Leo, so Vulcan must be in Leo. It could be in the second house, it could be in the third house, but it must be in Leo. So we know that for a fact. The moon could be here to help me reshape matter as I build my causal body, that moon in the fifth over here. Purifying and raising the quality of the form which the moon represents. Another function would be to help me develop the will to serve. That's another function of the fifth house. So it connects the past patterns and the karmic ties that I have with my Leo personality, as Leo is the traditional ruler of the fifth house. Both Leo and Vulcan are strong Ray 1 energies of the will. So that's a connection that indicates my personality is working in cooperation with my moon, hopefully to help elevate the form onto a higher spiral. Another connection is that my sun and moon are sextile each other, 11, 15. So this is a favorable relationship between them that's an opportunity for the personality to effectively work on the imperfections of the form that need to be overcome, at least in my humble opinion. Now, the Leo Sun is here in his home sign, so that's a very strong personality placement for him. Negative traits of Leo include being too headstrong, egotistical, and arrogant. I don't have any of those. Oh, wait a minute. Of course I do. I can be all of those things. But I think that I have tempered them for the most part and can generally be characterized by more of the positive traits of kind, having a big heart, being overly optimistic. Yes, probably overly. The keynote from the angle of the form is I rule because I am. This is a very self-centered Leo person, and I like to think I'm not that kind of a person at all. Instead, I believe I'm working on expressing the esoteric keynote of Leo. I am that, and that am I. I own my Leo identity, but I recognize that I am also part of that greater entity in whom we all live and move and have our being. I am not the center focus, but I'm a small cell in this greater being. Yet I have a purpose and specific work to do that will help in the greater good, in whatever small way that is. So from this new perspective, I recognize that I must work and adapt to group dynamics. So awakening to these esoteric energies, the sun here, as the esoteric ruler of Leo, is probably veiling Neptune for me, the heart of the sun. My sun's at 11 Leo, and Neptune is here at 23 Libra, and that forms a quintile aspect. They're 72 degrees apart, and that's a very favorable aspect of talent, of creativity, or spiritual ability. So these two have a good relationship, and that aspect fits very well. The quintile is an aspect of the five, of the five-pointed star, and it fits very well in here with the purpose of that fifth house. Neptune is the sacred ray six planet. So this could be how my personality gets its ray six emphasis. I like to think that I'm also awakening to the energies of my Aquarian Earth, which is opposite my sun over here. And working on blending that Leo Aquarius axis. So that's part of this Libra that I have here, the blending, the balance that I think I see here with this Leo Aquarius axis, and that shifts me away from the super selfish side of Leo and gives me more openness towards humanity as a whole and the group work that I'm trying to do. Now, my personality life was fun. It wasn't much spectacular going on. It was definitely mundane. But I can actually look back now over all the things I've done, the places I've been, and I can see how what it did was give me experience in many of the things that I need today in the service work that I do for the Moira Federation. In the long run, my personality life taught me the variety of skills that I use now every day in the managing of the courses, in the assisting with the webinars, and in the several Moira Federation websites that I do some of the behind-the-scenes work on. So I've spent a lot of time on that Leo personality, but that's my personality work. Leo Sun does get help here, I think, from the Earth and from Neptune. That Ray 6 personality, I can and do get fiery and indignant. I can stand up and fight for a cause, but it's not usually a personal one. My fiery causes are usually directed at some injustice that I see or wrong to someone else that I think I have the power to influence somehow. In my personnel days, woe betide the person who screwed up with somebody's pay, because they heard from me as I did my best to fix it or make sure they fixed it as soon as possible, because there's nothing worse than messing with someone's pay. There were other things I could get real fiery about, but that was one of the worst. I think for me, this is like Hercules facing the Nemean lion to help the people from being terrorized. The lion is the coordinated personality run amok, something that we all must wrestle with. And we all have to face that point where our own selfishness gives way to selflessness, where our own wishes and desires have to become subordinate to the greater good of the group. Hercules had to focus his personality to work of the soul, and through that he gathers the strength and courage to face the lion in the cave. Well, I haven't faced anything so dramatic, yet it does seem that I tend to go after the selfless causes that stir my fiery Ray 6 warrior into action. One of the things that I've noticed is that there is a theme for me and my wayward personality here. Service does seem to be a major direction in my life, but my Leo pride and ego can and do get in the way sometimes. I have always liked helping people where I can, volunteering to do extra things and to help on projects, and I've done that throughout my career. But whenever I get too prideful about it, I usually get whomped somehow, reminding me that I have to let go of that ego. So in little ways, I find myself there in the cave facing my own ego, trying to see the greater lesson that I'm supposed to be learning. Slaying the lion of my personality seems to be realizing for me this lifetime that the service we provide is not about our own expectations, but it's about the needs of those that we are serving. We can care about the work, do our best job, but we must remain detached, especially if things take on a life of their own and shift direction, because they usually end up working out for the greater good in whatever fashion that might be. But sometimes that means setting pride and ego aside because they have no bearing in the overall work. They're just personality things that get in the way. So that's my Leo personality side. It's definitely there. It's probably the most prominent. But I also own my Gemini ascendant quite well, too. My sun is in my third house, which is the traditional Gemini house. So that's one connection between the two. In this way, my ascendant and my sun, they share similar objectives. The exoteric ruler of Gemini is Mercury, the messenger. And my Mercury is at 24 Cancer, right here. And he's semi-sextile my ascendant, okay? So that's a minor, it's a friendly connection between the two. The exoteric keynote for Gemini is let instability do its work. Well, that can be flitting from here to there, trying to gather in a ton of information, but not necessarily having discrimination with it all. I think that was probably very descriptive of my early frenzy to learn all that I could about astrology, about mundane astrology, Vedic astrology, shamanistic astrology, the whole gamut. I had books piled way high. I was going off in all different kinds of directions until one of my mom's friends handed me Alice Bailey's Esoteric Astrology, and she asked me to explain it to her. Boy, this was definitely the book that I had been waiting for, and I knew that it was now going to be my primary focus. The esoteric ruler of Gemini is Venus, and my Venus is at 24 Virgo. We saw that before because, remember, it was the esoteric ruler of both my moon and Neptune. Well, now it's the esoteric ruler of my ascendant. She brings the discrimination and the analytical ability. She brings that Ray 5 energy that I needed to concentrate, to weed out the unimportant distractions and hone in on that true discipline, esoteric astrology. I really resonated with the esoteric keynote of Gemini. I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. We talked about the Gemini labor last month, and I can really see it here applying to my ascendant. I was gathering the apples, and that represents gaining knowledge. The labor teaches that wisdom is applying that knowledge to the problems of life. That was what I needed to learn, to quit the studying for study's sake and actually start applying it. Listen to my inner voice. I'm hearing something. Okay, it went away. Listen to my inner voice, not the false gurus. Quit going out on every astrological talent that I found and focus. So the purpose here is to learn to subordinate the personality to the soul, to use the love and wisdom of the soul for clarity of vision, and to actively become involved in service. This labor tells us the way is always marked by service, and a selfless act of service never delays our progress along the path. So I have this theme of service here as undercurrents with both the Leo and the Gemini labors, and also with my Aquarian Earth. In fact, it seems to me to be a primary focus of my personality this lifetime. So as the esoteric ruler of my chart, Venus does bring in that ray 5, and being in Virgo, it brings in rays 2 and 6. So both Gemini and Virgo transmit that ray 2, and that's what I hypothesize as my soul ray. So that makes perfect sense to me. I still, of course, have a lot of work to do on this, and I tend to focus more with that concrete knowledge, the concrete mind of Ray 5 than with the higher mind. But I'm working on it, and this is a prime opportunity to do just that. Venus relates well to most of my other natal planets, setting up a pattern of them all working together. We've seen that already in the rulership with the moon, with Neptune, with the ascendant. And what we can see here is that Venus is actually square my ascendant. That's a challenging aspect. It means I'm still working on that personality level and just beginning to awaken to the esoteric rulers and the energies, and I haven't worked out all the kinks yet. Venus is sextile to Mercury, 24, they're 2 degrees apart. That's a favorable opportunity for the two rulers of my chart to work together. Venus is semi-sextile to Neptune, so it's right next door. That's my sun unveiled, so that's another minor yet friendly connection between the esoteric ruler and my personality unveiled. There's plenty more aspects, as I have a whole bunch of planets and points at that 22 to 24 degrees. And so Venus interacts in some fashion with all of them, as does Mercury, who is the messenger. So there's plenty of dialogue here with my soul purpose, with my chart rulers, as I get my act together and I work on the waning of the personality and the waxing of soul influence in this true Gemini fashion. So that's what I have to say about my chart. Eva, would you like to add to?
Yes, for sure. Before I ask you some questions, I just want to point out to everybody that's seeing this chart is that you'll notice that most of the planets that BL has is at the bottom of the chart, which is the nighttime of the chart, and we call that the subjective part of the chart. She only really has one planet, which is Mars, above the horizon. I am not going to include the Earth, because the Earth is always opposite the Sun. So if the Sun is down, under, then obviously the Earth is going to be above. But as far as her movement in life, she is going to grow from learning lessons and going over whatever she has learned subjectively. This is a chart that shows that her growth is on the inner side. It's not going to be necessarily by being out there in the public. It's going to be by her inner growth. The other thing that's worth noting is if we look at where the MC is up there at the top where the arrow is, that divides the chart vertically in half, and she has equal planets on both sides. She has five on the east side, which is where the ascendant is, and she has 5 on the west side where the descendant would normally be. What does that tell us? It tells us that she can work equally well on her own or with other people. So there's a real balance there, her moon balance in Libra, between working out with other people, needing other people for her growth, or working on her own. So those are the basic things I see in the chart. Now, I also want to add, BL, that for you, the sixth ray is also really being emphasized with Mars in Sagittarius. That's a real big push for that sixth ray. And The interesting thing is that, they're opposite again here. So I was going to ask you, how do you see Mars working opposite your ascendant?
Well, I see it as the axis working out as my ascendant, my soul purpose balancing with the Sagittarius because my Mars is there. So that not only puts this, the seventh house of my significant others, but it puts me there in the seventh house as well. So it balances for me the Gemini Sagittarius as well as the first and seventh houses. So, I see everything in my chart as balances really.
Okay, so you know also that it forms a T square with
Yes.
Venus at the apex. So, do you find the challenges between, because they are, show everybody the T square, because you'll see the squares on these red lines, and that's considered a T square. So, what it is, it's missing the fourth leg, which would be way up at the top in Pisces. So, she's missing that. We tend to think of a T square as being quite challenging because it's missing that fourth leg. How do you live that?
I don't see it as challenging. I see it as opportunity. These are life's lessons that I need to learn to help me balance these two. I think that Venus here in Virgo keeps a check on Mars in Sagittarius. That's my militant Ray 6. But this, like you said, is a very good placement for Mars. And so I never really have looked at these as crises and challenges when they come. I've always looked at them as opportunities. Oh, wow, this is something else I have to work on overcoming. And I know I can do it, so I'm going to do it. And that's probably, Mars in Sag, the optimistic, the ever optimistic person that I am.
I have one more question and then I think I'm done. And that is, there is a theme here with the seventh house and Libra. Libra, as we know, its home would have been in the seventh, is the seventh house. And Libra, as we know, is about relationships. And here she's got Mars, which is a very powerful planet, is it not, in the house of relationships. So usually when I see Mars either in Libra or in the house of relationship, I will ask a question like, do you push for the way you want to see relationships work out? And I say that again because there's that relationship there between the two. Do you push for relationships? Do you have a way in which your idealism, Neptune, in relationships with the moon there, and do you push for that? Because usually with Mars there is that. There's that a word, the word isn't dominant, but there's definitely sometimes a forcing of relationships in a particular way.
I don't think that I force it. I pick my battles. Let me put it that way. I pick my battles wisely, and we agree to disagree on some things, and I get my way in the things that really matter to me. What I see Mars in Sagittarius in my seventh house is the fact that I'm married to military men. I was married for 10 years to one guy, and he took me for 4 years to Germany, and so we did a lot of traveling, and then we got married when he got orders to go back to Greece, and I applied to join him in Greece, and boy, wasn't he happy when they sent him to Oklahoma instead and canceled his orders to Greece. But anyway, the point is, he was a military man. We did a lot of traveling. Same with my second husband. He was a military man, and we've been married for 34 years now. And so that's where I've always seen Mars in Sag is the military men and the traveling that I've done because of it. But let's say anybody with a Leo sun is not going to be dominated by the men. They're going to have their say.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm glad you recognize that, because I was going to ask you about that. And just, you know, expand the thought of Mars in Sagittarius in the seventh house. Just expand that, because obviously it's not just military men. There's more to that than that.
Right.
So your perspective, just expand that. That's all. Because there is that theme here running with the moon in Libra. I mean, you can't escape that. It's there.
Right.
You know, and so that's being emphasized yet again.
Right. Okay. And I have to say the two guys are really nice guys, and you know, they let me have my way when I need it, because I don't. I don't push it in all things, just in a couple of things that are really important to me. And of course, you know, Venus in Virgo, the ruler of my chart, she's in detriment in Virgo, but that's mm-hmm. because the personality aspect of her is waning as the higher right human relations and the mental aspect and the discernment, that's what's waxing for Venus in Virgo. So, yeah, I mean, we could spend all day talking about this. And, you know, you mentioned how I was, how everything was very inner for me. Yeah, I'm a definite introvert, and I could be a hermit. And I think the only thing that saves me is this in-your-face Leo right here. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm one of those introverted extroverts, or extroverted mm-hmm. introverts, as the case may be. But, you know, I think all that's by design. I needed this inner strength that I get from all of these here. And this is the saving grace that gets me out in public. Oh, and this.
Right. The other thing I want to mention is that I find that certain houses are more, I don't know if the word is more important, but certainly ones that we have to address almost because they play out in our life all the time. And that is the cardinal points, those four houses, 1, 4, 7, and 10. Because the first house is the house of our identity. So, of course, I would ask you how you see that, you know, Jupiter and Cancer as your identity. The fourth house is
Let me address Jupiter and Cancer in the first house and talk to you about my weight issues, overdoing the water. Yeah. Okay. I'm getting the form under control, but sure, that's one of the big things is, you know, larger than life in the house that we project outwards. And okay. Right. Next.
So the fourth house is the house of the home. It's how we live in our home, which relates so much to the seventh house, because the seventh house has to do with relationships. And it's usually about the other being either a spouse or a friend or someone at work. But generally, we think of, you know, a marriage. So the fourth house is how we run our home. The seventh house is about the other. So with Venus in Virgo, and why can I say about Venus in Virgo? Because I have Venus in Virgo as well. And I've thought about it to death. So I'm sure you keep your house exceptionally neat, because that almost takes in almost a seventh rate, fifth rate approach. So there is a real neatness to the way you keep your house. What about critical? Are you critical in the way you handle your home, the perfection of everything within the home?
Well, yes, of course. I have that OCD thing going on, which is more seventh ray, really. But yeah.
It's also Venus in Virgo.
Yeah.
So the seventh, this, I don't want to belabor at this, but the seventh house we've already addressed, which has to do with Mars in relationships, Mars in not so much aggressive in relationships, but definitely a drive there. There's that drive, there's that energy in either trying to make the relationship good. You see, there's a drive. So the drive will show itself in all kinds of different ways. Mars is about drive. Mars is about sex. Mars is about feelings, you know, definite, strong feelings. And that's why I brought Neptune into this, because Neptune in Libra is about our ideals, about what relationships ought to look like. And with your moon there, the two go hand in hand together. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. And then the 10th house, which she's got no planets in there, but the 10th house is still ruled by Pisces. And as she said, she's constantly trying to serve and to help and to try to be there in a capacity that is helping humanity. And we see that in the work that she does. 10th house is about your career and you're out in the world. And this is what we see. There is that saving force that you definitely exude.
Well, thank you. Do any of you guys have any comments or questions about my chart before we move on to Eva delineating her chart? Either we're boring them all to death or we're telling them so much. We're telling them so much great stuff that they're just awed. Okay. All right. So over to you, Eva, for the hot seat.
Okay. So starting out exactly the same as I approached BL's chart, we see that I only have one planet above the horizon. Everything else is below the horizon, which means, again, my life and the way I learn through life and the way I move has to be subjective. It has to be internal. And that is so, so true. Everything, I don't grow. It's an interesting dichotomy here, because if you look at the Libra and my sun in Libra, I have a stellium in Libra, which is, if we had Chiron there, if Chiron was on this chart, I'd have Chiron there as well. So I would have like five of those, they're not quite planets, but five of them in Libra, which Libra is air. There's so much mind there. And internal is, again, it's mind and it's internal. So the two go hand in hand for me. But the dichotomy that I was getting at is that Libra likes to work with others, right? Libra is about right relationships with others. And so as much as I do enjoy working with another, I have done that through work and I've done it with a spouse. I like a relationship and I like having a partner and I like working with others. Everything, however, that I've learned has been internalized. Again, subjective, it's underneath the horizon. So that, and then the only thing that's above the horizon being Uranus in Gemini, which some say is brilliant mind, but that doesn't apply to me. But I like that. I like that because it'd be nice to go for that. It's in the 12th house, which again is a subjective house. It's again an esoteric house or an occult house, which everything is subjective. It's not out there. So if it's not hammered home one way, it's hammered home another way. So my life and my growth is definitely a subjective kind. So that's kind of obvious. So going back to the sun in Libra. So not only do I have the sun in Libra, I have four planets plus Chiron in Libra, which means I have a lot to learn about Libra. I've always maintained that when we are born in a sign, it doesn't mean we understood it and we get it. It's something that we need to work on. So obviously soul chose for me to have a lot of Libra because I need to really understand, learn, express, write human relations. That's what Libra is all about. Yeah, I could be the hostess with the mostest. I can entertain. I know how to be on the social scene if I go to a party or a gathering. I can be very friendly and I know what to say and do, but that's not what it's all about. What it's all about is right human relations. And it took me a long time to understand that that is not only about another, because Librans tend to want to cooperate. They want to please. They want to have right relations. And in doing that, they many times give themselves away. In other words, they give their power away. They don't stand in their own feet, in their own sense of self, because it might create waves. It might upset the apple cart. So it took me many, many years to learn that right human relations was also about being right with myself, not just with another, not just making it good for somebody else, but also what is right for me. That's it. It was a huge, major lesson for me. And of course, I have my Mercury there. I have my mind there. So it couldn't get away from having to deal with all of that. And I've got Jupiter there, which enlarges it even more, makes it even more about Libra. Kind of see that? And then I have Neptune in Libra, even though it is a generational thing. Neptune in Libra is also all about my my ideals about what a relationship ought to look like, what a relationship ought to be. And I remember, you know, in my years, you know, I've been married for 53 years. You know, I've been married a long time. So I remember in those early years, I wanted so much a relationship with my husband to be a certain way, because that was my ideal. That's what I thought it ought to be like. And again, that had to be lessons learned, because it's not always like that. So again, that whole Libran thing was a major, major learning for me. Now, in this particular chart, using, I don't know which house system you're using here, Regiomontanus, it's the same thing as Placidus. It shows all my Libra stuff is in the fifth house. I'll get to that in a moment. But if you use a different system, like I used to use the Koch system, all my Libra stuff was in the fourth house. Well, in my early marriage and raising a family, that was very important to me. So what I have learned also in astrology is that you sometimes have to look at both. If it changes it that much, you've got to look at where it showed up before and where it shows up now, and consider the two of them. And so fourth house Libra stuff was very much the way I lived my life. It was very much family, because fourth house is the Cancer house. It's family. It's the way you are within the home. And so I always try to create right relations within the home with my children and so on. But years ago, Michael used Placidus system or Regiomontanus, and it moved everything into the fifth house. So then I had to consider, what is that like for me in the fifth house? Well, the fifth house is the house of the soul, the causal body, or the egoic lotus is the fifth house. And in my later years, I have noticed that my creativity, which in the earlier years were around the house, because I would make curtains, I would make bedsprays, I sewed clothes for my daughter, I did canning, I did make jams, I did all that Susie Homemaker stuff when it was in the fourth house. Once it moved into the fifth house, I applied myself to the fifth house, and my creativity started to be much more in an esoteric vein. So through the Maurya Federation, creating curricula, creating slides for all my presentations when I had my center here in Toronto. So that creativity and that soul life became more blossomed for me. I grew more into that whole fifth house stuff. So I can truly say that I try to live as a soul, and I try to be as conscious as I can. My mantra is 24/7 being conscious. Every night when I go to sleep, I say I am conscious all the time, which sometimes makes my sleep a little difficult because I'm too conscious during my sleep and I don't sleep well. But I am trying to be conscious as I can. So I am really living that fifth house right now in my present life. So I don't want to belabor this. Okay. The next, or the first more important thing than the personality, is obviously the ascendant. And the ascendant for me is in Cancer. And not only do I have my ascendant in Cancer, I have two planets, very important planets, in Cancer as well. Now, Cancer, as we know, rules the fourth house. So was it the fact that I had all that Libra stuff in the fourth house, or was it the fact that it was Cancer rising and Cancer... first house identity is the family, is the ashram, is the all the relatives and everybody concerned within my family. So it's just an interesting thing that I never knew if it was the cancer or it was the fourth house stuff, but cancer is about I live in that lighted house that I create. And that lighted house is my temple, is me, not my home. It is me. And I try to shine that light on everything that I do, whether it's the work I do esoterically for the Maurya Federation, or whether it is within the family, or whether it is within the relatives or socially. I really work on radiating and expanding the light that I am. Now, I do have Saturn in Cancer, and they say that Saturn in Cancer is a lot of karma there because it has to do with family karma. And there was, and there is, and that doesn't change. It's still around. And I've had to, live that, come to terms with that. And Mars, they say, Mars and Cancer, I'm sorry, Mars and Saturn together is a really hard combination because it just, that Mars will just energize it even more. That whole responsibility when it comes to family, karma that it comes to family. It just, my parents and my in-laws never spoke to each other. It was like war between the two of them, which wasn't really my karma, it was their karma. But here I'm living, Saturn in Cancer. Like, I can't get away from that, can I? So you see how even though they brought that, as soon as they met each other, the spark started to fly. I still had to live that because it wasn't comfortable within the family. So anyway, I have a lighted house and therein dwell. And the rulers of my Cancer rising sign is the moon. And the moon is opposite my Cancer rising. It is in Capricorn. And one of the things that I learned, moon in Capricorn means you're bringing a lot of things from the past into this lifetime. And what is the ruler of Capricorn? It is Saturn. So you see how I would have brought a lot of the family stuff from the past into this life because I have Saturn, even though it's in Cancer, it's the ruling planet of Capricorn. And for those of you who remember, what we had is a mutual reception. We may or may not have talked about that, but if we haven't, let me just clarify what it is. The ruler of one is in this is in the sign of the opposite. So the ruler of Cancer is the moon. The moon is in Capricorn, and the ruler of Capricorn is in Cancer, which was a Saturn. So it emboldens or it magnifies that relationship even more. So how do I live my moon in Capricorn? Responsibility is like written on my forehead and was as a kid. And I had to look after my sister. I just everywhere I went, responsibility landed in my lap until I learned a lot later about right relations, Libra, how to say no. I couldn't say no. And therefore, I would take on all this responsibility in every capacity, whether it was at work. I was a real estate broker. And so, again, that's Cancer, right? I was a real estate broker. I did far more work than I really needed to do or could do. And I still do a tremendous amount of work within the home. So responsibility is something I live all the time. I take it on and I don't belabor it. I just know that it's there and I just do it. I'm a doer. Okay. So the esoteric ruler of Cancer is Neptune. And Neptune is down at the very bottom of the chart, right at the very, very bottom. And so we have Neptune at 6 degrees of Libra, and the other ruler was the moon. It was at 0 degrees of Capricorn, and they're in square with each other. So both rulers are square to each other. And not only that, it creates a T square with my ascendant. Do we see a similarity in patterns here between my chart and BL's chart? We both have a T-square. We both have Cancer rising. Anyway, so then my moon and my Neptune become very, very important because they're squared. And the easiest identification I can give you of the two together is that the moon representing my mother, and if she could have merged Neptune into me, she would have. She mirrored herself in me, and I could do no wrong. And she was crazy about me, and she loved me. She didn't suffocate me, but she totally was merged with me and me. I was the firstborn, and therefore it was all about me. So that's one relationship that existed when my mother was alive. You see, where she never got along with my sister. So it shows you the dynamics I had to live within the family, right? So that's Moon and Neptune. Neptune and Libra, again, is about the idealism of what right relations ought to be like. And it is the esoteric planet of my ascendant. What I didn't talk to you about was the rulers of my sun, and the main ruler, as we know, is Venus, which is right next door, and it is in Virgo, much like VL had. And it's in the fourth house. It's in the house of home. And I am meticulous. I have a seventh ray personality as well. My house is usually quite meticulous, and I know my family tells me all the time that I'm nagging. Okay, so I'm on their case all the time about neatness and about not leaving a mess. So that's the downside of Venus and Virgo. But the upside of Venus and Virgo is that it is the soul. Venus is fifth ray. Venus is the soul, and it's birthed in the cave of the heart. So it has a chance to really flourish and to shine in that Cancer lighted house, so that my soul, Venus, can really, really shine and do its thing, its fifth house stuff. Within that T square, just a minute here. Within that T square, I made a few notes here because there's a lot to be said about that T square between Neptune, the moon, and the ascendant. The lower expression is that it's the seat of desire, which Neptune is. It could also be addiction, which I'm not at all addicted. On a higher turn of the spiral, that Neptune is also the ideal of union with God. Union is a Libran thing, you see. It's about bringing together, the Libran mantram is, I choose the way which lies between the two great lines of force. It's really bringing together the two opposites and finding union with the source or with God or with soul or whatever words we want to use. It could also be the visionary. It could also represent my spiritual aspiration and my devotion to the soul. Also the creative imagination and true intuition, which is buddhi or pure reason. So with the moon squaring Neptune, it does make me extremely sensitive. Something I didn't realize how sensitive I was. It also makes me sensitive on all levels, not just being sensitive to someone else's needs, but I'm so sensitive on the physical plane. You know, it's too hot, it's too cold. I'm not comfortable when it's too hot. I'm not comfortable when it's too cold. There's all these other little sensitivities that I took a good look and realized that it could easily be that combination of moon and Neptune. Because the moon can also represent your physical form. The moon is the mother of form. So that sensitivity can relate into my body. I have sensitive skin. I have sensitive hair. I am sensitive. I have a roommate when I'm at the conference who reminds me all the time how sensitive I am. So I realize how sensitive my form, my body is. but I'm also sensitive to someone else's needs, because that goes into right relations, right? Recognizing the needs of someone else. I can be very sympathetic. This combination also means that it's important to share my emotions and to talk about my perceptions or my visions, because this combination doesn't keep it inside. It needs to find an outlet, and that outlet is in the form of sharing and feedback. That's one thing that Elena has told me, is that I do well with feedback. So this combination, sharing the perceptions, sharing my ideas, sharing my dreams and so on, and getting feedback helps me put everything into proper perspective. So that's basically what I wanted to say about that combination, because it's an important one. It's the T-square, and it is the two rulers of my ascendant. There's a lot I could say about other things, but I think that that pretty well covers the main things in this chart. That is what the chart really is. What I live, this chart, and it's part of who I am. So, if there's anything Biel you'd like to add, or other people, please, I invite you.
First off, I would like to know what your hypothesis is for your soul and your personality.
Good question. So I'm a second ray soul with a seventh ray personality. So you and I relate really well with those two, in those two areas.
Right, we do. And so you see your ray two soul focusing through your Venus in Virgo, like I kind of do with mine.
As well as Cancer, because I'm very nurturing. And one of the ways I nurture is also through food. I'm a pretty good cook, and I cook for the family. And so that second ray of inclusive and nurturing, and it comes through that way as well, through the Cancer. The Venus in Virgo, for sure, that brings on that second ray quality. Where does the seventh ray show itself here? Well, I could say that we've got Cancer, which gives off the seventh ray. I can say why am I stumbling over my words here? A Capricorn is 1, 3, and 7. And although Libra does not give seventh ray, it only gives third ray, it is ruled by Uranus. And Uranus gives the seventh ray. And I forgot to talk to you a little bit about Uranus. Uranus and Libra, they say, is doing things differently. You know, in some ways I'm quite conservative and I'm a bit of a follower, but I do things differently as well. It's an interesting combo within me. I do things differently. I think differently many times, and yet I think the same as others. So I don't know what to say about that. I like the idea that it's a genius mind, right? Because maybe at some lifetime I'll get there. And it's subjective. So that's one ruler. That's the esoteric ruler, and the everyday ruler was Venus. And both of them, both Venus and Uranus, are planets of the mind. So again, it re-emphasizes mind, and Uranus is in a mind sign, Gemini. And even though Venus is not in a mind sign, it itself is about the mind. Right. And Virgo is ruled by Mercury, which is of the mind. So it tends to be a lot about mind too for Virgo. So I can't get away from the mind, you know?
Right.
It's just always there in my chart. Okay.
I also wanted to point out, you know, that your Uranus is trine your sun there. So, you know, that brings in that energy that you were talking about for your personality level. On the soul side, though, because it is, of course, the soul ruler, but it's the personality. So that gives that emphasis on both layers there. And then, of course, you didn't mention, but Uranus in your 12th house is going to be hidden, and it's already the rebel, and it's moving backwards, so it's going to be inhibited, and it's in an intercepted sign. So that means that in order for this ruler to really shine, you had to somehow unlock that interception. I really think you pretty much covered the fact that our charts are so similar in so many different ways. And one of them is I do believe that Neptune, the sun veiling Neptune for you here, they're both in Libra. So this would play into that as the esoteric ruler there, of course, as the esoteric ruler of all of these. So is there some way, was there something that happened in your life, some transit or something that you know of that you think helped you unlock that inhibited interception there of Uranus?
I would think that is when I stepped on to the University of the Seven Rays. When I started the first course with Michael, I had unbelievable ahas. Like this, I kept saying to him when he interviewed me so many times, "I want more. I want more." He says, "What is it that you want more of?" And I could not identify what it was that I wanted more of. But all I wanted, I guess, was soul. And it was that just opened up the gateway to through the meditations and through the homework that we had and through application that I could feel that I was starting to really, really open my mind in a way that, it never had been. Even though I had been into spiritual work, it was through the yoga scene, but it never did it for me like the University of the Seven Rays and Michael's courses. So I think that was the time when it happened. It would be very interesting for you, my darling, to do a 1988. And see if anything like that shows up, because I don't do those things as well as you do. But in your spare time, when I know you've got so much spare time, you can maybe see if anything showed up in 1988, because that's when I started with him,
Oh, okay. I'll see what I can do. I also wanted to ask you about or point out, I don't know if you guys remember with when we looked at mine were pretty balanced. I had a little bit of everything in there, a little shy on Earth, but if you looked at the Earth houses, you saw that I had them represented. So to me, it seemed very well balanced. Not so much here with you. Everything's in the cardinal signs for you. So that's very, Ray 1, Ray 3, Ray 7. It's very pushing. It's very, I'm going to press forward. It's very initiating. So you don't have as much fixed. One of the things about the cardinal is it is very initiating, but it's not necessarily the follow through. You need some of the fixed to have the follow through. Do you notice that at all?
No, because with my moon in Capricorn, I'm very practical, and I'm an achiever, I'm a manifester, so somewhere along the way I know how to do that.
Okay, good, 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 good.
Because that's an important one, moon in Capricorn.
Right. And of course you mentioned your sensitivity and your mental and all of that shows up right here in the air and water,
In the
of
water.
course. Right. And I thought it was interesting when you were talking about how sensitive you are to everything and how you attributed that to your moon square Neptune. Well, I'm personally going through that phase myself, and it's because for me they're conjunct.
Well, it's an interesting thing because I have a third ray physical body, and I do think that the sub on the on that would be first ray, because I'm an unbelievably strong for a female, and when I work out, when it comes to weights or anything, I'm very strong. I'm very resilient. There's nothing I've ever done has been too difficult, if you know what I mean. I've been able to work through everything. So in that way, I'm not sensitive. I'm not a lazy, sensitive kind of person because I'm overly strong. And yet, if there are creases in the bed on the sheets. It bothers me, you see. These kinds of little sensitivities. If it's too hot, I sweat too much. I'm too uncomfortable. If it's cold, I end up with Raynaud's in my hands. I'm too uncomfortable. So those are just three little examples of how that sensitive of the form affects me. My skin is sensitive, you know, and yet I'm very strong. So again, there is this dichotomy. Every step of the way, I would say there is dichotomies for me. On the one hand, there's this, and on the other hand, is that. Is that a Libran thing? I don't know.
Well, and it could be a Cancer thing
know.
Too, because you have, you know, your Cancer ascendant, and that's the physical appearance and characteristics.
Yeah.
And then you have, like you said, this karmic aspect here of Mars and Saturn in Cancer, and you have Cancer on two cusps. So,
yeah,
and Neptune rules both of those. So, you know, it's. In little ways, everything that we have in our chart comes together to make us
exactly
the people that we are. So,
and like you, I have a Pisces up on my midheaven.
Yes, exactly. We're very close.
Yeah, yeah. So I too feel like I want to help everybody. You know, I want to anything I know, I want to impart. Anything I do, I want to help other people get it too. And that is my mantra when I teach. I want to make sure they get it. Why do they get it? So that they can be the best that they can be, you see? So it's that wanting to help, to save, to uplift other people.
Right.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Eva on her chart?
Yeah, please, guys, ask me questions.
Well, I'll step in and ask you both this question. I've been wondering about, and BL, you did such a wonderful job of putting forth the ideas about progressions and transits, and I've been wondering if either of you have something that you've noticed in the progression of your sun over your lifetime, because that begins to occur. If you have any thoughts about that and how it has impacted your attachment to the natal chart in looking at your progressions.
That's a very good question. And yes, I would say yes to that. Let me just talk to you a little bit about my Cancer rising. My progression shows that I have Leo rising. Well, isn't it interesting that I have Leo rising and I have all of the stellium in the Leo house? So it puts the two together for me. You see, the Leo is about, you know, you shine, you're out there and you're shining. Well, in this stage of my life, with the teaching and the videos and the conference, I kind of am shining, if you know what I mean. I'm out there, where in my previous part of my life I wasn't. It was more Cancer rising. And then if you're looking at the progressions, I went since let's say it's 20 degrees, it's just easier. I had 10 more years roughly, or 21 years as a Libra sun. And then I went for 30 years as a Scorpio sun. And that's when I got interested in psychology. Psychology, and whether it was through reading about it and how to parent and how to use psychology, or later on through my esoterics. And then I had so many things in Sagittarius. I had like stellium upon stellium in Sagittarius. And that's when I was doing a lot of traveling through the work I was doing. I was teaching all over the place. And why I'm traveling again now, I don't know. It should be gone already by now. But I am traveling it again. So that's the other thing. Sagittarius being the teacher, being the one imparting the truths, the higher teachings, the higher learnings. So definitely, 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 they all played out for me.
Yeah, I can say the same thing. I'm in my 60s, so my solar arc progressions have all now moved two signs over. And so all of that Leo that I had is now in my fifth house of Libra. Which is an important emphasis for me, and all my Libra has moved into Sagittarius. And like Eva, I'm doing the teaching, and I'm traveling now to do that. And so I can see that I'm growing into those purposes. It never negates the natal aspect, but what it does is it adds nuances to it. And so, I can see that that's moving. And I've done the progressions. I've done the transits and everything. You know, I look at that when I look at the planetary cycles. And I really do notice how certain things, when I had my wake up moment at 42, I could see the different transits and how they impacted with the things that I have going on. So, okay, we got a couple of hands too. So thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe, for that. Yvonne, go ahead, please.
Okay, back to the basic natal chart. You guys are getting too complicated for me. All right, I have a question. So of the size of these houses, okay, each house, does it still, when you do this, this wheel that's up there, is it 30 degrees in each one? And when you change the different system, does it change where the house is, where you're, like you were saying, it changes where your signs are, and then it changes the ruler of that house? I'm confused on which one to use, and you know, if you're using a different system, then you're in a different house and have a different ruler. So I'm confused about that.
Yeah, that's a issue, and it's usually a personal preference of astrologers as to why they use one kind of house and not another. What we have is at the northern latitudes, some of the houses don't work all that great because you end up having these little tiny houses and interceptions. I saw one guy who was born in Sweden, and he had four signs intercepted, you know, two different axes intercepted, and it made for a really, really strange chart. And that's why there are some of these other houses. The Placidus is one of them that doesn't do well for births at higher or lower latitudes. Regiomontanus is another one. We were just trying to pick some that we felt were fairly representative, but as Eva described, it can in fact make a difference. It will never change your ascendant or any of the four angles. The ascendant and the midheaven, no matter what the house system is, will be the same, as will the nadir and the descendant. It's only going to change the second house cusp, the third house cusp, the fifth house cusp, the sixth house cusp, the eighth house cusp, the ninth house cusp, and the 11th and 12th house cusp. It's only going to change those. But it can, in fact, change your direction. As Eva mentioned, it can move planets into different houses. So it's really up to the astrologer's preference, but there's usually a reason that they pick what they do. And what I've actually found when I've played around with the different houses, that I can usually achieve the same type of astrological results, just in a different fashion.
With all of that, that is why many astrologers use equal house system. Equal house makes every house 30 degrees, period. And this is what I started with. I started with equal house system when I started to learn. And then when I had to switch to these different, it took me a little while to understand all of that too. So I appreciate, you know, Yvonne asking this question and wanting to understand that, because it took me a little while to bridge that, because with equal house, everything is 30 degrees. It's so easy.
Okay, so when you give us our charts, and there's a couple of us that have agreed to present, which one am I going to have, and how do I know where my planets are? I mean, I have my basic chart.
Well, I'll give you the chart, and I'm going to use the Regiomontanus for all of them. Unless you specifically say, no, I like the Placidus one that I have, I want to use that.
I have no idea what I like. I don't even know what I have. Okay.
Well,
because I think Michael used Placidus. When you come to the astrology conferences, I'm pretty sure Michael uses Placidus.
I have the Moria one.
That's good.
Quest and Quest Universal. I have that basic chart that you did for me 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Say geocentric tropical region, that is something true node, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it is. It's this one, yeah.
So each of these has 30 degrees in it?
No.
No.
No. Okay.
The signs, Yvonne, the signs are always 30 degrees, but the houses might be more. So for example, let's look at the one where the pointer is right now. It starts, the first house, it starts at 5 degrees and it ends at 25 degrees, which means there's only 20 degrees in that house.
Huh.
Now we go to the fifth house. It starts at 4 degrees in Libra. So then you would have 30 degrees of the sign. So you would have the 24 degrees of Libra, and then you have 28 degrees of Scorpio. So you would add 24 and 28, and then you would get 52 degrees. So there's 52 degrees in that particular house. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because she was born very far north.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why it changes the size of the house, which is fine. It doesn't really matter. Whatever chart you are given, it's okay to work with those houses, because as one teacher once told me, if it tends to straddle between two houses, you've got to look at both houses. So if you were to get another chart and let's say one of the planets straddles, for example, when I do Placidus, I get my Saturn, which in this particular house system is in the first house, I get my Saturn dropping into the second house. So I have to look at Saturn in terms of the first house and in terms of the second house, because both work. That's the whole thing. Well, they all work. Everything works.
Yeah, okay. And I'm the same way. I have a couple of planets in the first, a couple in the second, and a couple, and my son I've got in the third using the Regio Montanus, but if I change it to Placidus, all of those are in the second. So, but it works for me, and boy, I really like the idea of moving Jupiter out of my first house. But, you know, with my weight issues, it's kind of a toss-up there. Which one actually feels more right? So anyway, it's a crapshoot, but they all seem to work out in the long run with whatever astrologer is using at the moment. So,
and that's a very key thing. They all work out.
Thank you.
Okay, and Michael, go ahead, please.
Hi, I want to thank both of you for the extraordinary presentations that you've given.
Well, thank you.
Okay, and VL, I wanted to thank you for picking up on the interception of Uranus in Gemini and touching on that, because Eva didn't point that out, although it's not truly related to the Sun, Moon, or Ascendant. So. I was going to ask about that, but you kind of...
It is important. It really is. And I have to say, when I started doing all of the things, getting all my notes together for all of the things that I'm asking you guys to do when you present your chart, I had a 45-minute presentation, and I'm like, uh-oh, you know, I want these to be about 15 minutes, and then we can discuss it. So you can't talk about everything. You have to pick and choose.
Right.
And I'm sure that's exactly what Eva did, because she had a lot of good things to say about the key things in her chart, the moon, the sun, and the ascendant. But yeah, there's so much more going on in there, that we have to consider.
See, I didn't talk about aspects really, except for the T square. Because they included the two rulers of my ascendant, but there are, as you can see, there are all kinds of squares, and there are other aspects, and all of that can be talked about too. But it's not as important as the things that I think I emphasized.
So I find it interesting how the two of you, as well as myself, have planets predominantly on the bottom side of the chart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yep. You know, we all come from that Ray 2 hermit that is now opening up to the to become the occultist. So we have to have some of that down there. And then we each have in our own charts, we each have things that even though we're inner, we have a lot of that innerness. We also have enough of that. Let me go forth. Let me help. Let me teach. Let me interact. Let me use this right human relations that we have emphasized in various different ways within our chart. And let me use that occult mind that demands that I take a broader view and look at world affairs and see where I can help the most and how it all fits into the greater picture of the ashrams of which we're part. So,
and the final thing, as I recall from last month, Eva said that you said that you would be traveling, and so maybe there would not be a webinar in September.
That's correct. The next webinar is going to be in October, and it will be that first Saturday in October. Let me pull up a calendar here.
You're doing it so I won't. Yeah, you see, this is what I said. If my son is still, I think my son is still
the in Sagittarius. Sixth.
I'm going to Brazil again.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I'm going to be teaching in Brazil with Tanya, you know, Tanya Belfort. Mm-hmm. And she's organized all of that. And so I'll be teaching the rays as well as astrology. So I think I have a day off in between. That's like a heavy, heavy load, but...
So we'll be on for 6 October, and I will start with the, I'll need to do both the Virgo and the Libra. You know what? I can do an August one with the next 4 labors, or 3 labors, the Virgo, the Libra, and the Scorpio. Well, no.
No. Why don't you just do 2, and okay, then one person will present their chart.
Okay. So I'll do Virgo and Libra, and then one of you, Michael and Yvonne, you're the 2 volunteers at this point. Who wants to do the Virgo? Who wants to do? Yvonne?
Who wants to be first? Who wants to be first?
Do you want to be first, Yvonne? Oh, do you want me to unmute you? Go ahead.
I am a Virgo rising. Whatever, I don't care. Whatever Michael wants to do, I'll do whatever you want.
Okay, let's do you first there on 6 October because he's all Gemini. So then the next month we can do Scorpio. In November we can do Scorpio and Sagittarius. And then he can tell us how his Gemini interacts with Sagittarius.
And Loni, I see that you're on here. If you want to have your chart done, please volunteer. We would love to work with you.
I'll email her and see. Yeah. And I'll email the students again and ask them for assistance. So, okay. Well, thank you guys for attending and thank you for your comments. And thank you, Eva, for looking at my chart for me.
Thank you. And thank you, all of you, because, you know, it's always good to get another person's feedback. That's what I said. Feedback is so important because it enlarges our perspective and we get caught up in our own little perspective and that's all we see.
Joe, would you like to delineate your chart for us?
Sure, I'll be happy to. And I'm thinking about this idea of you know, the things you've already covered maybe not being emphasized. I have some interesting, my natal fourth house is ruled by Scorpio, or it's intercepted in with Scorpio with Chiron and Jupiter. And so it there might be some different things we could look at in the fall.
For those of you who have done this already and you want a little bit more advanced, just express that. Express to us that that's what you would like us to also look at, because we want to start this very, very simply. We want really for most people coming in to just address the ascendant, the sun, and the moon, and anything else that they see there that might, like the rulers of those three luminaries, and if they are aspected at all, if they can handle the aspects. We don't expect people, especially in the beginning, to go as deep as we have done. We're just adding another few layers to you because we've done this with you guys before, and I know that this is your second time, so we've enlarged it a little bit. But basically, all we are expecting is the basics, and the rest is entirely up to you.
Yeah, and like with Michael, he's got triple Gemini. So I asked him to look at the labor and see if he could split the labor up into his triple signs. And so he's kicking that around. You know, it's always interesting to look at someone who has the triple signs. You know, he's got Gemini on everything. And so last time around, he looked at the decanates because they were all in a different decanate. And so that was helpful. So yeah.
And I think I'd still like to hear all that again, because it emphasizes more things. And you know, if we can give any feedback in that area, it might just, again, enlarge what you already know.
Right. And again, I'm hoping that you guys will include the labor. You're self-muted, but go ahead, please, Yvonne. Yvonne, go ahead. You're self-muted.
All right. October is Libra. I am Libra Sun, so that'll be good for me, too.
Oh, yeah. Libra Sun and Virgo Rising, and I'll do both of those labors. That will be great.
Okay, that'll be good for me. Thank you.
Yeah, perfect. I'm very, very happy, Yvonne, that you're pursuing this, really. I'm excited for you, and I think your understanding is growing and growing.
I don't remember what interceptions are, though. I have to start doing some more homework.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. Like Eva said, we really want you to start with the basics. I think the last time I did my chart, I talked a lot about all the configurations I have. This time I didn't even mention them. Eva did, but I didn't, because like I said, I was just talking about the basics, the sun, its ruler, the moon, its rulers, and the ascendant and its rulers, and then how I thought the labors were playing out. And the first thing I know, I've got a 45-minute presentation. So there's, you know, we want the presentation to be 15 to 20 minutes, and then we'll all discuss it for another 15 to 20 minutes. So
I appreciate sticking to basics, because I think if you want to get new students in, it can't be overwhelming.
For sure. For sure. I agree with you. But, so that's why the basics are always important. You know, there's always opportunities to learn more, but if you don't have your foundation and you don't know your foundation, it's very hard. It becomes overwhelming because there's so much to astrology. In all honesty, it's just unbelievable.
Right. And so it's good that you all are going to focus on something different because it gives the more opportunity for everyone else to learn, whether they're participating now or whether they go look at the webinar after the fact. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Eva and Joe, for your behind the scenes part. And of course, Eva, for all of your words of wisdom.
Thank you all. It's, you know what? I get so pumped up when we do these webinars. I love them. And I always feel so aspired, you know, lifted up as a result. So thank you all.
And we hope you do too. So, okay, well, good night. Good night, everybody. Or good day, or wherever you are.
Yes, Yvonne, I see your hand up again.
Oh, you are.
Unmute yourself.
Thank you and goodbye. I put the wrong thing up.
Oh.
Thank you all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.